Well, good morning and welcome to the July 26th morning show. We're here this morning with me, Julie Calamine, and my co-host, Jim Healy. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Julie. How you doing?
Oh, great. Joining us this morning is Kathleen St. Clair McGee. She's the founder and president of the board of directors for the American Heritage Wildlife Foundation. Good morning, Kathleen.
Good morning.
Before we go on to our what will be a very interesting interview with Kathleen, we'll talk about a few things like our weekends, the weather, etc.
I'll start with the weather. The present temperature is 66 degrees. It's lovely outside. It was a scorcher, but really I don't think us up in the Idaho Panhandle should use that word considering what other folks around the country are going through.
We don't know from scorchers up here compared to the country.
But it's a lovely 66 degrees. Now, if this forecast holds true, then I suggest everyone go out and get their chores done because it says scattered showers and thunderstorms after 11 a.m., partly sunny with a high near 85. So it's not going to be as hot as yesterday, and the chance of precipitation is 30%.
About the highest chance we're going to have for quite a while.
Well, what I'm sort of finding interesting is I've never really understood this, Julie, is when it says chance of precipitation is 30%, we have a big broadcasting area, let's say our county, so 30% everywhere, or is it just like over here, rain could fall, but the other 70% of the county is dry.
You've given me an idea, Jim. Since this is the Tuesday morning show and we talk about items outdoors, maybe we need a meteorologist to join us some week.
Wouldn't that be nothing? Just to explain what we're reading, because I'm certainly not up to date on it. We do want to say that this is the last Tuesday in July, July 26th. Boy, has July whooshed by, hasn't it?
That's right. And what did you do with your weekend in July, Jim?
Let's see. Well, I went up to Canada on Friday, spent the night in Nelson, one of my favorite cities. You know, when you get the feeling you want to go out of country and a different language, possibly, you see signs and kilometers. Did that and then came back on just in time on Saturday to work the movie at the Panada.
Wonderful.
The Hunt for Wilder People. If you hadn't seen it, you missed a good one, a New Zealand film.
Really worth seeing.
Yes. And how about you?
Well, I did a couple of things. The first thing I did was make sauerkraut with my neighbor for the first time ever, sitting in a crock on my counter. We'll see how that works out.
Are there any secrets to good sauerkraut?
Lots of pounding of the kraut. Pounding with a big wooden mallet. You got to smush it.
Is it like churning butter or something? I mean, you just got to, or making schnitzel where you have to pound out the pork. I mean,
it's like that, Jim. My arms are feeling really strong.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Okay. And so how big of a crock?
This is a three. Well, we had 2 3-gallon crocks, but we shared with someone. So we've each got about 3 gallons of kraut, if you can believe
it. So how long does it sit on your counter?
Can sit as long as we want it to. Well, not quite as long, but it can sit a long time. Weeks,
can you eat literally out of it while it's sitting there?
Yes, you can.
Well, is there like a prime time sauerkraut when you harvest it?
I think we're going to go a couple weeks and then start eating it.
Cool.
But Jim, this is not a kraut. This is not kraut.
We're not talking kraut. We're talking heritage wildlife, aren't we?
That's right.
Well, soon. Well, one more thing to talk about on the weekend. Went out and picked huckleberries up on Schweitzer on Sunday morning, and what a beautiful morning to be out.
You couldn't help it after our last week's topic of wild edibles. You had to get out there.
I didn't focus in on any other edible but the berries, and they were plentiful, not huge. I was looking for the trophy berries, the alpha berries on the bushes, but they weren't as huge as I had hoped. But, you know, picked about 3/4 of a gallon, and they're now safely tucked away in our garage freezer for winter ahead.
Well, let's move on to our wonderful guest today, Kathleen St. Clair McGee. Kathleen, what about you? Any huckleberries for you?
No, actually, during June and July, I am basically indisposed. I pretty much don't even see my husband for June and July, and we will get into the whys of that.
And that's because you are the founder of the American Heritage Wildlife Foundation that does animal rescue. Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about the foundation, its origins, its mission, etc.?
Well, the mission is to preserve the local wildlife through rehabilitation of the injured and orphaned, and also provide community education. So it's a multifaceted group. The thought for it began in the early 90s when I relocated up here from another part of the country. And the first thing that I noticed was this area is obviously beautiful in wildlife, but then absolutely void of any type of a facility to assist the animals in need. So basically relocated away the late 90s, moved back in 2001, and started the process.
What's your background? How did you come to having a passion for wildlife rescue?
Kind of always been more of an animal person, if you'll say. And I have over 20 years professional experience with animals. That's not just, okay, I like animals, I've had dogs and cats. That's, all right, I am a professional. I have been paid to do professional work with animals. So that's zookeeper work, that's working on horse ranches, working at animal shelters, that type of a thing.
So you're pretty comfortable with animals that might not be that friendly with you.
Yes.
Oh, boy. Yes. So tell me more about your staff and the organization, the foundation. What is it? How many folks are there?
On a given day, some days it's just me, myself, and I, which is fine so long as the numbers are basically manageable and you can keep up with the schedule. It's all about maintaining a schedule. Some of the animals need fed every 15 minutes, so you have to have their clock in your head. You have other animals that need fed every half hour, other animals that need fed every hour. Some animals need bandaged a couple times a day or need different medications a couple times a day, so you have to have those internal clocks in your head. So it's pretty hectic at times.
I noticed on your website that it said you have a wildlife rehabilitation permit. What does that mean?
That means that I have gone through all of the hoops that are required to provide proper and appropriate care for the native wildlife. So that kind of all goes into the process of becoming a nonprofit facility, a nonprofit organization that's dedicated to the animals.
That can't be easy.
No. When I first started the foundation back in 2001, that was not the, okay, spend 5 minutes on the computer, do all the forms online. That was, all right, I'm staring at the stack of paperwork that I need to do by paperwork. So it was the 501c3 process to the IRS, the state nonprofit incorporation process down to Boise. Then there is convincing Idaho State Fish and Game and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Migratory Bird Department that I am trained, qualified, and can provide appropriate care for all of the animals in need. So those two organizations get involved as well.
How does one identify an animal in need? How does an animal end up with you?
So an animal ends up with me usually one of a couple ways. The main reason that you do want to approach an animal when you see it's in need, I like to not only to help remember our name, American Heritage Wildlife Foundation, but also to help you identify if an animal is in need or to do the right steps is just remember AHWF. So be aware of the animals that you're going to see in your area. Watch for signs of distress, or rather hesitate before you approach that animal. So A would be aware, H is going to be hesitate before you approach. W is watch for signs of distress. Signs of distress are going to be the animal is vocalizing a lot. The animal is dragging a wing. You see blood, any kind of anything like that. That would be there's your signs of distress. And then F4 would be to follow through. Don't just pick up the animal, put it in your bathtub, and think that you can put on the doctor hat and provide the appropriate care. Follow through by contacting the right authorities. Now, that might be Idaho Fish and Game. That might be American Heritage Wildlife Foundation. That might be Bird of Prey Northwest or Mystic Farms. Mm-hmm. So those are all the assets that we have up here for the wild animals in the Panhandle.
And how do we know which one to contact? Just based mm-hmm. on what kind of animal? Or
Everybody networks with everybody. So even if you call me and you say, okay, I have a deer in need, I can refer you to the right place.
Oh, good.
If you call the lady that does the deer, if you call Mystic Farms, she, you know, if with a squirrel, she's going to refer back to American Heritage Wildlife Foundation. So,
what's your specialty at American Heritage Wildlife? What would you say is your?
Yeah, what animals are you caring for?
What are the animals that you can rest your reputation on?
Well, I've always had a passion for the canids. But because we have non-game permits and small bird permits, and we are pending the large game animal permits, the only canids that we've been able to provide care for are, say, coyotes.
Mm. Not wolves, then. So you wouldn't be doing wolves.
Which is a hot-button topic, but we are still, our large game mammal is permit is pending. And so that means we can provide care for the orphan bear cubs. We just need to acquire the rest of the funding to get our large game enclosures constructed.
Okay.
What's the smallest animal that you deal with?
Well, see, Mystic Farms will do the deer. Bird of Prey Northwest is very knowledgeable about all the raptors. And then we pretty much cover everything else in between.
Wow.
So skunks,
we go squirrels, we go robins, we go reptiles, we've done turtles, we've had little baby bat pups, I would say. So the smallest would probably be a little bat that was about 3 days old.
Aww.
And when you have an animal that an adult weight is like 4 grams, you can imagine how small that is.
Oh, that's incredible.
So yeah, we, turkeys, right now, you name it, we've probably seen a lot.
Greens. So what's the goal of, you bring animals in that are in stress or need help, is the goal to get them back out? But I take it that there's probably some wounded animals that will never be able to return to the wild.
That's correct.
Then what happens to them, Kathleen?
So when an animal is brought in, it's already in a stress situation. When you have a wild animal and they're just raised to want to avoid people at all costs. So you're already in a high stress situation. So right there, you're already affecting their physiology. So when an animal comes in and say the wounds are too traumatic, that the animal will never recover, most of the time the animal does pass away on its own. If the stress is too great, the trauma is too great. Other times when a situation is deemed necessary, the animal's in too much pain or that type of situation, then the animal is humanely euthanized. And euthanasia is just the best way to say, you know, put at peace.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Instead of suffering out in the wild, because the wild is not this happy land.
It's not humane at times.
Yeah, exactly. The wild is not humane. So we just try and end the suffering, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's bottom line. But then there are animals that this animal is I would say it's fit and it could survive, but it would need to be survive in captive situations. So say it was a bird that had a wing amputated. That situation, there are very strict guidelines that I have to abide by, that are set forth by Idaho State, that if an animal cannot be released into the wild and cannot survive in the wild on its own, then that animal must be euthanized.
Really?
So I am under strict guidelines to either release it or euthanize it.
Hmm. And are there any alternatives like zoos or, you know, like nature centers, anything like that, or not really?
Well, the zoos have their own capacity. And from being that side of the world, I have a little bit of a picture from that standpoint. So the zoos have their own captive species that have been in captivity for, you know, many generations in some cases. And so they have their own surplus list to spread those animals around.
I see.
Birds of prey are very high interest animals, and they're obviously covered under the purview of the Migratory Bird Department, federal government. So certain facilities, if they so choose, they can apply for and get, so long as they follow the specific guidelines, they can get what is called an educational bird permit. So then that bird, for example, an eagle that has a part of a missing wing, that bird, if it's the right behavior and is willing to put up with being used as an educational bird, then that bird can then become an educational bird.
But so the birds have, some birds may have a better chance.
Some. Yeah. But everybody sees a robin and it's really not fair to have like an educational robin. So it's, you know,
Nobody likes a robin with advanced degrees.
No.
You know?
Oh boy. Well, poor robins yes. that lose wings, but at least the raptors have a chance.
Right.
Hmm. So really then, almost any animal that's injured would come to you.
Pretty much.
Could come to you. That's a big job.
It is.
How do you handle that?
My library is many shelves and packed quite full of professional journals, of professional articles, of networking capacity to get in touch with other nationwide professional rehabilitators. Just lots and lots of books, lots and lots of journals, lots of reading, that kind of a thing.
And that brings me to the overall question of what's happening in the country. Are wildlife rescues up? Are there more and more animals being rescued because there's so many of us? Or how's it going?
Some of the percentages that have been discussed on surveys, nationwide surveys, through the two professional organizations that where rehabs are members, which is the International Wildlife Rehabilitators Association and then the National Wildlife Rehabilitators Association. Those two organizations, IWRC and NWRA, they've done these national polls, and basically 80% of the animals that are brought to all the wildlife rehab centers are because of some type of human impact. Of that 80% that are, or actually of the 100% that are brought in, there was, again, a national survey that if a rehab facility is releasing more than 30% of your total intake of animals, you're doing really well.
It's a tough job.
What's the average, I know this is difficult, average stay for an animal with you? Of course, it would depend upon its need.
True. Some animals, they just need a couple days of R&R. In this instance where perhaps it's just a youngster that's a little bit undernourished, isn't quite figured out where the grocery store is out in the wild, mom stopped feeding it because it said, hey, you're a big baby now.
You can do your own. Yeah.
Go for it. If they're a little bit undernourished on these super hot summer days, they get a little bit weak. They get a little dehydrated. They're easier for us humans to identify, oh, that animal's in need. Sometimes, you know, a situation like that, just a couple days. And they're good to go. Other animals where the trauma is quite severe, for example, you know, the dog gets out and bites, you know, a raccoon baby on the top of the head. We are fighting infection. We are fighting the trauma, all of that situation. So that might take a couple months. Other situations where if young mammals are brought to us with eyes still closed, ears still closed, that's going to be a long process. That's going to be several months.
I would think so.
Before we go any farther, let's have contact information.
Sure.
If one does come across an animal, how do we get in touch with you?
Please call. Do not email. Do not Facebook message. Call. Calling will get you right there. So call.
And the number is?
266-1488. That's 266-1488.
Area code 208?
Yes.
Perfect. And if you want to find out more about the organization, go to?
American Heritage Wildlife Foundation website is www.ahwf.org.
Okay. Or you can Google it.
Yeah. That's right, but that's an easy website. Good. So tell us a little bit about your facility. You're in Clark Fork, correct?
Yes. We are out there. We're expanding every year. We're growing more. We're expanding more. We just replaced our animal infirmary room floor. A couple years before that, we had to replace the roof. The last couple of years, we've received a nice grant to construct a very nice 24x32 aviary, large flight aviary.
Wonderful.
So we have capacity to provide care for all but the largest of the birds in our area.
That's a big expansion. That's great for you.
Yes.
Is it true you're on your own land, or are you on land that you lease?
I am on my own private land, but I do have the foundation lease 1 acre of my 2 acres.
Ah.
The surrounding lands are vacant and available for sale. So depending upon funding, if we were to receive additional funding, we could expand our operation further.
And you'd like to do that. And how are you funded?
We are, you know, a lot of people think that we are funded through state or federal funds, or because we are an Idaho State incorporation, we are funded through Idaho State. We're not. Our only funds are through community.
Okay. So you need
did
funds.
Mention grants.
We do apply for grants, but the issue with the grant picture is if you look at all of the grants out there as a big, huge pie, 10% of those grants go towards animal groups.
Mm-hmm.
1% of that 10% goes toward wild animal groups, particularly rehab. But there's only about 0.1% of that is actually towards general operating expenses of wildlife rehab facilities.
Wow. So mainly you count on donations.
Yes.
And is there a place to donate on this website?
We do have several ways that you can donate, and not only is it financial contributions, but there's a lot of things that you might not be aware of. We have some sites up there through Yolks, for example. We can receive part of your grocery funding, things like that. We have many, many ways that you can support us without even trying.
Can one volunteer?
Absolutely.
How does one go about becoming a volunteer?
Well, we do have a volunteer form on our website, and what we try and do is match the person's interest with what our needs are. I mean, I don't want to shove you into changing my website if you can't stay on computers. So I want to match you up to the best that's for both of us.
The best fit.
So, yes, the best fit. So that's either you can go online, fill out the volunteer form, or, again, call us. Call 266-1488, and we will be very pleased to talk with you and try and connect you.
Now, I noticed on the website, when in the area under volunteering, it said that ideal volunteers would be willing to live with a rather high stress situation at times. I can imagine that's because you've got injured wildlife, and then not having access to cell phone. Jim, does that sound like radio volunteering to you?
Absolutely.
Kind of the same. Maybe we'd be good candidates.
There you go.
So
certainly welcome aboard. The more the merrier.
But you're really committed, and when you're volunteering, you're focusing. I can see why one wouldn't want cell phones or anything like that.
Right. Kathleen, you mentioned you don't see your husband in June and July. I take it those are the peak busy months. Is there an ebb and flow to the year, like when people bringing animals in, it slows down, and then you can go pick huckleberries?
Yes, I would love to go pick huckleberries, but no, that usually doesn't happen. Well, for example, yes, there is an ebb and a flow.
Okay.
In the winter is when I can sit down and plan future events and occurrences, try and catch up on my paperwork, that type of a thing. Usually the season starts ramping up in May. June, we had 520 volunteer hours in the month of June. I know July is going to surpass that. The first 2 weeks in July, our animal case load increased by 24 cases. So we are, I believe, at like 28 animal intake cases so far this year, the first 3 weeks of July. So, yes, it's quite chaotic in those months.
Would you say it's mostly baby animals, at least in the spring, or not necessarily?
In North Idaho, we have a tendency to have those those early spring windstorms and rainstorms. That's usually when the mama birds have their nests up there. A lot of times those nests get knocked down, get blown down, that type of thing. So usually in early spring, we'll have a run on like small little birds. Midsummer-ish, when the young mammals are out exploring with mom, they're old enough age, they're leaving the den, they're exploring, figuring out what it means to be a wild animal. People mistake them for being orphaned, and those youngsters get kidnapped and brought to us by mistake.
Kidnapped.
That is the right word, but it's said because, you know, the folks, as humans, as compassionate human beings, and there are many, many up here, and I love them to death, there are many folks that think with their heart, and then they just never engage their brain. They're always with their heart, and I love them because I'm the same way, very compassionate, but at some point, you kind of have to stop and disengage. Are you really in distress? Do you really need me to step in? Kind of like being a parent. Do you really need me to come and pick you up, or can you kind of, you know, do this yourself, little man?
Kathleen, why don't you take us through the rescue process? What happens when you do get that person who's rescued an animal? What happens?
Well, usually the first thing, like I said, again, please do not email. That's the most heartbreaking thing, is when I am not, for obvious reasons, I'm not able to get to my email. 3 days later, then I see somebody has sent me an email that they have found a whatever type of animal. So call 266-1488. We will certainly respond within a fairly short amount of time. Someone calls, says they found a whatever. We'll just say they found a robin.
Porcupine.
Okay, they found a porcupine. Oh, hey, I've had a porcupine. I have cared for porcupine. So they found a porcupine. And so then the next step is to try and advise them and assess the situation and get as much information from that person about the situation. So it's kind of unraveling the mystery to find out, how did you come across the animal? Did you feed the animal? And if you did feed the animal, how can we backtrack and undo what you fed if you fed the animal something incorrectly? Or if you gave the animal water and the animal should not have had water, how can we try and solve that problem? And then the next hurdle is going to be for that person to arrange delivery to us, because we simply do not have the resources to rescue the animals. That's where, again, we need our community that has cared enough to call, to care enough to find a way to deliver the animal to us. We're there 24/7 once we get the animal, but we need you to do a little bit more for us to help that animal to bring it to us. Or if the animal's bleeding and in distress, then get in touch with your vet so that they can follow through with the right steps, because we're not a vet clinic. We can treat minor triage, but we're not.
Okay, good to know. That was a question mm-hmm. that was coming mm-hmm. your way. And so luckily you don't handle moose, so I wouldn't have to try and get a moose in the back
no,
of my...
No, certainly don't pick up any ungulates into the back of your truck. And Dory will attest with it. Do not pick up any ungulates into the back of your vehicle.
Porcupine would be hard enough.
Yeah.
So then it comes to you. What happens next?
So then the next step is basically to try and stabilize that animal, which means to get that animal's blood pressure back down, to get that animal's vital signs back down, get that animal back to being calm and settled. Try and assess any kind of injury that may or may not be there. The situation with wild animals is very difficult to assess. And as a professional zookeeper, I have been trained to identify those subtle nuances that would not normally be seen. And because a wild animal is not going to let anybody know that they have an injured wing or that they have a slight limp, because that's a sign of weakness, which means I'm dinner for somebody.
You know, even our pets are that way,
yes.
aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
So you have to really assess the entire animal from head to toe to try and assess the situation. What type of trauma is here? And that is just a matter of almost like a process of elimination, you know, a big checklist that you're running through when you have this animal in care. And then once the animal has their initial exam, any kind of medications, if it needed any, have been administered. The animal is then set up in an appropriate enclosure. Hopefully it will begin self-eating and self-drinking if it is of an age where it can do so. If it's not, then you step in and become the surrogate mother and actually take over to do the feedings and the cleanings and the so forth like that. And then, if it's a young animal, try and get it to identify as being a wild animal and learn the natural wild behaviors.
I have to ask this question. Do you disguise yourself as a non-human, or is it not that extreme?
There are instances where, yes, absolutely, I disguise myself as a non-human. And that's things from when you have young birds. Often that's, you know, doing simple things like masking your hands or putting an entire mask on yourself. And then with the mammals as well, you definitely have different tricks of the trade that you do to, again, remove that human factor.
Okay, let's take a break here. You're listening to 88.5 KRFY with Julie and Jim on the morning show. And our guest is Kathleen St. Clair McGee. And before we have a song queued up called Coyotes. Have you gotten coyotes at the foundation?
We have. The youngsters that we have received are usually from areas where trapping is very high, very heavy, very mm-hmm. prominent. Mm-hmm. So we imagine that the adults have been trapped.
Something's happened to them.
And so then we have these little youngsters that we raise up and release back out so they can contribute to the web of life.
Cool. Well, this is a song by Richard Thompson that comes from the Grizzly Man soundtrack. I don't know if you've seen that film, but it's an interesting film about the relationship between man and wildlife, in this case, grizzly bears. Here is from the soundtrack, Richard Thompson with Coyotes here on 88.5 KRFY. Then we'll come back and talk more with Kathleen about wild animals. That is Richard Thompson with Don Edwards from the soundtrack from Grizzly Man here on 88.5 KRFY. And we're going to continue our conversation with Kathleen St. Clair McGee, founder and president of the board of directors for the American Heritage Wildlife Foundation. Kathleen, I want some happy stories about animals that came to you in dire stress and needing all the love that you could give it and healing powers, and that
they get to go home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Back to the wild.
Do you have a good story?
I actually have two good stories. I have some unhappy stories, which I think I need to share, but I will definitely start with some happy stories
because
they are terrific. So a few years after, once I got into this field, I had a seagull with a broken leg, big cast on the broken leg, but to make sure that its recovery time was short, wanted it to continue to work its flight wings. Can't do the flight because of that heavy cast, so I come up with a sling. So put the sling, I just suspend the sling on my porch, it sees the grounds, the trees, everything, and starts flying, working the wings. The release was fairly quick. Like a couple years after that, I had another seagull, broken leg, brought in. This seagull proceeded to do the same type of treatment, put it in the sling, hang it on the porch. That bird would not fly unless the ground was moving. So twice a day, the bird and I would go for a jog.
No
kidding.
To jog to get the bird to flap its wings.
Yes.
I cannot,
that's dedicated.
The bird's legs are so small, and I cannot imagine a cast. You know, I mean, when I think of a cast, I think a cast on a human.
Right.
I mean, on a bird. Yes. That must be absolutely challenging and incredible to see.
Yes, yes. It was, and it was hot pink. So I don't
know. Did you sign it?
Yeah. I guess I could have.
Did it get a Pickett's color? Is that why it went pink?
You know, I'm not sure why the vet clinic put the pink on there. Maybe it's because what they had, maybe I don't know why, but it was just a nice happy color. So
how long does it, just off the cuff, how long does it take for a seagull's broken leg to mend so it can be set out again?
Well, as is expected, it depends upon the severity. So anything from just a couple weeks to about a month.
Any idea how it broke its leg?
No. I mean, it could have been slight nutritional deficiency, could have been smacked into a car, could have. So there's all kind of factors
that could have happened.
Right.
So are seagulls fairly common in your?
I have had a handful over the last 15 years. Another happy story is last year I had a female northern flicker struck a window. She was paralyzed. She remained paralyzed for about 2 weeks, and we just continued to provide supportive nutritional care. So that was feedings at irregular intervals of a specific diet that provided her with the appropriate nutritional requirements. Also kept her in a low-stress situation, or as much of a low-stress situation as we could provide with the human proximity. And then she did make a full recovery. I have suitable habitat, so I released her out on my facility, and she has come back several times with a mate to show off that I'm doing wonderful.
Wow, that's a great story.
Do you ever get a hummingbird?
We do have hummingbirds.
Go away.
We do.
Tell me about them.
As a matter of fact, we have one right now. Again, a window strikes, and unfortunately, most of the hummingbird situations are window strikes or broken wings. And so because they are so small, there's just no way really to administer the proper dosage of medicines to get that concussion down, to get the swelling down. It's impossible to heal, to pin a hummingbird wing, because when you have an animal that's 3 grams.
Right.
And so it's just a lot of the wildlife rehab situation, and this is what I discussed with my interns. This is my second year for having university interns. A lot of wildlife rehab is just to provide supportive care, to do your best to provide supportive care, because it's the animal that's always going to decide whether it wants to recover or if its trauma is too severe. And then there are the really sad situations of animals that are brought in. For example, like a nest of squirrels that fell out of the nest. I had this happen a few years back. Nest squirrels fell out of the nest. Babies were eyes still closed, ears still closed, no fur. Lady kept this little squirrel for 3 days, trying to feed it just regular milk, did not have it on heat before she finally brought it out to us after we insisted that she please bring it. Little thing had pneumonia. Little thing had just was in dire straits because of the situation, improper food and no heat. Other situations are folks find ducks or geese. They raise them up in their bathtubs. And then they just go take them down to City Beach and turn them out. Well, the goose, because you didn't have it in the proper setting, didn't provide it with the right nutrition. The feathering isn't proper. It doesn't have the right nutrition. It doesn't have the right bone strength. It has no idea it's a goose because you raised it up with your dog and your kids in your bathtub.
So it's done with love, but it doesn't end up in the right way. We need to
Well, it goes back to, you know, you're thinking with your heart. And this area is blessed to have the facilities that we have up here that can provide aid, because there are some areas in the nation where there are not the volunteer organizations that can provide care. So it has to go to certain individuals. But when you're in an area that has facilities that have dedicated people that do this for a living and are professional about it, then use them. That's what they're set up for. There's no reason for you.
That's what they're there for. I have a question.
Yes.
Can a listener who's interested, like, I'd like to see the facility and the animals under care. I'm sure that's the last thing in the world. The animal needs a lot of people looking at it if it's underneath stress to begin with. But do you have times during the week when a person can come out, or can they call the phone number and say, I heard the interview and I'm interested in seeing the foundation and your operation?
That is a fairly common question, and we do get the calls at 266-1488 asking us for public tours. We are not a USDA facility at this time that's open to public tours. And additionally, Idaho State has very strict rules and regulations about having the animals, quote, on display for the public to see.
Right, right. I was wondering about that.
But we can provide tours of the facility if there are potential volunteers or potential supporters that want to find out what our facility does.
Very good. That would be really nice if a person wanted to volunteer or maybe help with some funding.
Exactly.
It would be nice to be able to see the the foundation.
One common question that 501c3 organizations get when they talk about funding and money is, where does the money go to? Like, we get that here at 88.5 KRFY. Where does the money that we donate to the station, where does it go to? And we'll talk about equipment. We'll talk about ASCAP, BMI fees, things like that. Sure. Where does the money go when one makes a donation?
Well, as you guys are a nonprofit as well, you know very well that there are certain agencies that oversee what all of the nonprofits do, and they have certain numbers that they want us to abide by, such as less than 49% of your total revenue to be spent on marketing and fundraising. So we always try and abide by that. And in all reality, I try and put every penny I have back into the animals, but then that has the awareness fall short. So by our percentages, I'm trying to remember our percentages, but in essence, 75% of what is given to us goes towards the animal care, goes towards the vet bills, goes toward buying formula, goes towards keeping the lights on, keeping the heat pads on, and that type of a thing, as well as community education. We have 18 different presentations that we can provide to the community at the libraries, school groups, that type of a thing. I'm working on two more additional that I'm hoping to get to maybe this winter, but we have 18 different wildlife presentations that we can help educate. So that is also a huge portion of where the funding goes to. Now, obviously, there is going to be a certain percentage that goes towards fundraising and marketing. Like this year, we have two major events that we're putting on, and so some of the funding goes towards having these fundraising activities take place.
And yet I can hear that you're really spending the money wisely, but let's move on to some of those events because they sound fun.
Sure.
What have you got planned?
Well, upcoming, we have an exceptionally busy fall plan. September 14th, we're going to be at IPA, Pints for a Cause. September 17th, we have a comedy night fundraiser at the Columbia Bank Building. September 24th, we have the highway cleanup. October 5th, we have the Sip and Shop at Pondre Winery. And the first three weekends of October, out at Hickey Farms, the Pumpkin Patch, we're going to have a scarecrow contest.
Wow, that's a lot going on. So, and if one wanted to check on that and get it onto their calendar, where would they look?
Our Facebook page, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, so type
in American. And that would appear on Sandpoint Online as well.
Yes.
And we'll be making announcements like we do on the Wednesday and Thursday morning show editions.
Excellent.
So that would be wonderful. Tremendous community support, isn't there?
Yes. Oh, this is a wonderful community. I love this community. I mean, it's incredible what people bring us. You know, they, you know, little itty bitty, eyes closed, ears still closed, deer mice babies.
Oh
they
my!
Found, you know, and so they're driving all the way from Coeur d'Alene to bring us little deer mice.
But
a deer mouse is part of the web of life that we have. They're a native species. They deserve as much love and caring and compassion as a bald eagle.
And that leads me to a question I was thinking about. Does every animal that comes into you, if it has a good possibility of surviving, are they all treated equally? Is the mouse given as much care as the bald eagle?
Yes.
Yes. Wow.
You know, there have been nights like on the little bat pups. I'll stay up all night every 30 minutes because mammals are a 24-hour day clock.
Wow.
Birds are pretty much dawn to dusk. So birds get, some of the birds, the insectivore birds, such as swallows, they get 16 hours a day care, getting fed every 15 minutes.
Wow.
Do you ever get a skunk?
We have gotten skunks. And they are the most precious things. In the middle of the night, if you hear what sounds like birds chirping, it's mm-hmm. probably your little skunk family talking to each other.
How do you handle or deal with stressed skunks without getting sprayed? How's that? A bunch of S's. Yeah. Where did I just alliterate? Stress skunks without getting sprayed.
Yes. Nice job.
Thank you.
Yes. Very cautiously, very calm tones. You just try and keep, again, the stress level down. And
right.
You let them know where you are at all times. Because what a lot of people don't know, skunks are migratory. They're not going to stay in your backyard. They're going to keep moving through. So don't panic if you see a skunk in your backyard. Second thing you need to know about skunks, they have very, very poor eyesight. So they probably didn't hear you coming up when you got sprayed. And they don't like to do spray. Spraying is kind of painful for them. So they really use that as a last defense. But when you are something that is a perfect bread box size and the perfect meal size for just about everything that's out there, you have to have a powerful defense mechanism. So, but when we have had skunks in the past, it's usually been youngsters. You just let them know where you are at all times. And again, you keep your human presence at a minimum and let them stay wild and keep them calm.
I'd say run. this leads me to another question about classes. Are these the sorts of things you're teaching in the classes? And tell us more about them.
Yeah, our wildlife presentations we have set up, again, like I said, we do have 18 different lectures on, be it the different birds that we have up here, the different mammals that we have up here, that type of a thing. And what I like to do is just throw out as much information as I can about the individual species to try and pique your curiosity, to have you get out there and explore North Idaho, because that's what we want to do. We want to keep North Idaho wild.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned the ebb and flow of the year. You said in the winter months. Is there ever a point when there's no animal there?
There have been some winters where we have not been wintering animals over.
Oh, okay.
But there are winters where we do have animals that either they were brought in late in the year. Mm-hmm. And so there's, and say, for example, we had a sharp-shin hawk. It was a window strike on its migration out. There's no way that that migratory bird species is going to be able to be released in the middle of winter to try and find food. We just wintered that bird over through the early spring. It had sustained a broken wing, I believe. So then we just wintered it over through. That meant we needed to have the heat light there. We needed to have the hot water there every day. We needed to have a sufficient food source all the time. We needed to have somewhat of a warmer, protected space to recover and not be totally exposed out in the snow and so forth. So there are some winters where we do have animals that require daily care. Other winters where I get to just stay inside by my wood stove and do my paperwork.
Wonderful. We're here with Kathleen St. Clair.
I can't
see my glasses.
McGee.
You know, McGee with the American Heritage Wildlife Foundation. Anything in closing that you'd like to say? And of course, we could repeat the phone number and the website once more.
Sure. The phone number is 208-266-1488. That's 266-1488. And the website is just the name of the organization, American Heritage Wildlife Foundation. So the website would just be ahwf.org.
Very good. Any thoughts, any suggestions for folks out there? Any last words, Kathleen? Help us all do the right thing with the wildlife out there.
Well, just remember AHWF. Be aware. Hesitate before you approach. Watch for signs of distress. And then make sure that you follow through with appropriate actions. And that means do not go to the internet to try and identify how to provide long-term care. The internet might have some good stories, but you can't be a professional in 5 minutes' time.
So why don't we hear that phone number one more time? Now, folks out there, please write this down. Put it on your fridge for when that little animal shows up in your backyard.
It is 266-1488. That's 266-1488.
All right. Very good. Well, Kathleen, I want to thank you for joining us today. It's been a great, great talk.
Certainly. Thanks a lot, Julie. Jim.
And we have queued up a song that everyone knows. Have you ever had a blackbird in?
Yes. We have had actually multiple types of blackbirds, from an actual brewer's blackbird to ravens to crows. To, yes.
Oh, what fun. Indeed. What fun. Well, we're going to do the Beatles' Blackbird. That comes from the White Album, but not their version. This is Crosby, Stills, and Nash with Blackbird here on 88.5 KRFY. And then Julie and I will be back to close down the hour. That was Crosby, Stills, and Nash with Blackbird here on 88.5 KRFY. I want to thank Kathleen St. Clair McGee, founder and president of the Board of Directors for the American Heritage Wildlife Foundation. I want to remind you at 9 o'clock, the second hour of Amy Goodman and Democracy Now! Will be aired, coming to you live from the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia. Tomorrow, July 27th, on the KRFY Morning Show, Chris Bessler will be talking to teachers and students from the Music Conservatory of Sandpoint, along with several exchange students visiting from Mexico. So that should be a good conversation. And on Thursday, the 28th at 8 o'clock, join Jack Peterson and Jim Healy. Their guest will be Hannah Combs from the Ponderay Arts Council to talk about the upcoming 44th Annual Arts and Crafts Fair.
Those sound like great shows. And then next Tuesday, we've got an interesting show, Jim. And that is going to be our local fire marshal talking to us about how to stay cool and not have a fire situation around our house, have defensible spaces, and how to not make fires happen where they shouldn't. Should be interesting.
Absolutely.
There's some upcoming events this week. On the 26th and 28th, we're going to have an interesting dinner party at the Little Panada. It's called Charades at 5. I can tell you that the location is 304 North First Avenue. That's a fun comedy full of missed opportunities, misleads, and misdeeds. You can buy tickets at panada.org, or you can buy them at the door. It's $27. If you'd like to call, the number is 208-255-7801. Another upcoming event, and this will be on the 28th, is Yappy Hour. And that's going to be a tale.
Oh, that's always a fun event.
For those of us with the yappy ones, it is fun. It's a tail wagging good time. Bring your dog and enjoy a panhandle animal shelter benefit with live music, beverages, and fun. That's starting at 4 p.m. and going until 7 p.m. at Trinity at City Beach. That's at 58 Bridge Street. Another interesting thing that you might want to do this week is on the 29th, and that is the ADA, American Disabilities Act, celebration at City Beach. Disability Action Center Northwest hosts a free family event to celebrate the Americans with Disabilities Act that was signed into law in 1990, and it's going to be held from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. at City Beach. It will be open to the public, and it features free food, live music, prizes, and awards. Wheelchair basketball, boy, I've never seen that. Disability resource booths and face painting for kids. There will be free T-shirts given to the first 100 people. So that's kind of a big deal, Jim.
Oh, absolutely.
That's for sure. And then the last item I'll mention is on the 29th, and that's called Fun Fridays at KNWR, which stands for the Kootenai National Wildlife Refuge. That's up west of Bonner's Ferry at 287 West Side Road in Bonner's Ferry. And if you go to that, you'll learn how you can help pollinators, followed by pollinator arts and crafts for kids of all ages. The presentation is from 10:30 until 11 a.m., and then the crafts are from 11 until noon. That's free and open to the public.
Excellent. Should we go out with happy birthday to you? Whose birthday is it, Julie?
I know this one, Jim. Mick Jagger.
And we're going to go out with, he was born in 1943. He looks like he was born in 1843. Oops. Sorry, Mick. Here is the Rolling Stones with Wild Horses here on 88.5 KRFY. It's been great being on the mic with you, Julie.
It was a good time, Jim. See you next week.
And coming up, Amy Goodman at 9 o'clock with Democracy Now!